Blog Talk Radio.
So we're going to repeat what we had on July 3rd and bring up some of the issues that are going to be going through to the end of the year and probably into next year, such as the biggest slaughter of lawyers in U.S. history, the Pettit & Martin firm, why that's relevant. Now, it's relevant because these lawyers sat on the board of Chinese Community Housing, one of the biggest so-called affordable housing providers here in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, but the tenants have complained about a non-maintenance of conditions, blocked fire escapes, harassment of tenants who complained, prostitution, drugs, extortion, harassment. And it's not only them. In Marin County and San Mateo and San Francisco was an outfit called Innovative Housing. Boy, were they innovative. We will be putting up the shack, which they were charging $700 a month rent, no heat, no water, nothing. Another case where immigrant woman, we don't know if she was a citizen or not, if she became a citizen, was working in the vineyards in Marin, in Napa, had a child. She was given an unheated shack while the operators of Innovative Housing got a condo over in Marin County, Ann Howell, and from HUD, incidentally, and one of the other executives of Innovative Housing, she got a condo here in San Francisco. The operators of these so-called affordable housing scams live quite well, but the tenants in their projects may as well be a plantation situation. In one case, the rent in a affordable housing project named after a sexual predator, Juan Pifre, they raised rent 400%. It's what one observer described as a build and abandon project, as long as the rent money was coming in. We even had dead people getting homeless assistance, HUD funds. This is Chinese Community Housing, Pettit and Martin again. And, of course, we have the case of this guy Ferry, who went to Pettit & Martin because he believed that they had HUD connections. He tried to get a HUD contract for a residential project in Pleasanton, California. And maybe he went there, and maybe they operated in good faith on his particular deal, but they couldn't come through. He lost all his money, so he lost it and went and shot up the law firm. Biggest slaughter of lawyers and massacre in U.S. history. So these are the things that go on with these people. Among the events today, July 5th, we had, if you've been to Singapore and to Raffles, one of the great hotels in the Orient, Sir Stafford Raffles was born in 1781. One of the great admirals of the American Civil War, David Farragut, was born in 1801. And he's the guy at the Battle of Mobile said, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Fortunately, he didn't encounter the Confederate Navy's ironclads. One of the worst men in South African history, he abused the blacks, he abused other people, Cecil Rhodes, yet he started the Rhodes Scholarships, and were among the beneficiaries were Bill Clinton. Great Polish harpsichordist, Wanda Landowski, born on this day. Jean Cocteau, great French actor. The vice presidential nominee under Nixon. First time around after Eisenhower left office in 1956. Henry Cabot Lodge. It was in the Kennedy-Nixon campaign, presidential campaign in 1960. Henry Cabot Lodge later became ambassador to the UN. Also, it was from the famous Massachusetts family, and where the one of the unspoken, well-spoken platitudes was the Cabots and the Lodges ran the state because of the English settled it, and the Cabots spoke only to the Lodges. If you remember Gunsmoke and Miss Kitty and Jim Arness, Milburn Stone, who played the Doc in that film, he was born on this day, in that TV series, excuse me. Andrei Gromyko, who was one of the longtime foreign ministers of the Soviet Union, born on this day. Back to Eisenhower, Julie Nixon married David Eisenhower, the grandson of President Dwight David Eisenhower. And him and I forgot the other guy. Julie had a sister who married David Cox, and they both became junior lieutenants in the U.S. Navy. As did one of the journalists at the Washington Post who exposed the Pentagon Papers. He was from Illinois, and he became a junior lieutenant in the U.S. Navy. I guess you have to start somewhere, and junior lieutenant is the best place to start. Among the deaths today, great German architect who developed the Bauhaus system, Walter Gropius. And then Harry James, great trumpeter, he died on this date. Among the events today, the first recorded tornado. Can you believe this? It occurred in Massachusetts. We usually think of tornadoes occurring in the hinterlands like Illinois and Oklahoma. In 1643, a tornado hit around Essex, Massachusetts. In 1811, Venezuela became the first South American country to rebel against the Spanish colonialism, and they became independent. And Simon Bolivar was the great liberator of South America. In 1830, the French began their a 40-year war to conquer Algeria, and this only ended in 1962, when Charles de Gaulle decided France could no longer afford to fight in North Africa or Indochina. And if you remember the Salvation Army in 1865, William Booth started the Salvation Army. There's a great musical starring Gene Simmons, who plays Sarah Brown, who's going to save the soul of Marlon Brando in the Broadway play that later became a movie, Guys and Dolls. And in 1932, Portugal, the fascist dictator, set himself up. Salazar, excuse me. Became a longtime dictator. He finally died, and there was a revolution in Portugal. About the same time, 7 years later, Franco set himself up as the dictator of Spain, right next door. And this is important. In 1948, the Labour government had promised Britain that they would have a national health service, so the Britain's Health Service Act went into effect in 1948. And, of course, there are a lot of complaints about it, and there are some people think that it works quite well in universal coverage. 1962, of course, Algeria got its independence. And, of course, I remember when I was in France, I met a colonel who had fought in that war. And, of course, the French who lived in North Africa were called Pieds Noirs, Blackfeet. And when those French who left Algeria, North Africa, after 1962, they weren't that welcome in metropolitan France. 1971, we had the 26th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which gave the vote to 18-year-olds. In 1984, the U.S. Supreme Court, or SCOTUS, dealt with the exclusionary rule, which meant that even if there was a defective warrant, if there was other evidence, the criminal prosecution could go forward. And if convicted, it would stand. And we have, I think that's it for, we had, no, that's wrong. So we, since this was July 4th and things got screwed up, I had a little trouble still with one of my webs that I go to, not webs, but browsers, excuse me. So we'll repeat some of the things that we did on July 3rd. There was, and this is not known, in 1778, the British Army massacred American men, women, and children in a place called Wyoming Valley, Pennsylvania. This is before Wyoming was even considered to be a territory. And it was a Colonel Butler who was responsible. He blamed the Iroquois, and they didn't want to take the fall for what he did. George Washington later got even with them, and what he did was sent a Colonel Sullivan to burn Iroquois villages, about 40 of them. One of the most famous maritime paintings of all time, the Wreck of the Medusa, which you see these guys who were on a raft and ships in the foreground. What had happened in 1830, a French Navy ship, through the gross incompetence of its captain, ran aground in calm seas, and 130 people died. Also this week, in the Spanish-American War, the U.S. Navy sank the Spanish fleet in Santiago Harbor. There was also another battle, which involved Admiral Dewey in Manila Bay, which they sank the Spanish fleet there also. And the famous line that came out of that, "You may fire when ready, Gridley." And, of course, Patrick Butler, who we interviewed, who is former editor and a new author, who wrote a book about one of the great neighborhoods of Chicago, which we will review. One of his ancestors was on the Olympia, serving as a swabby, I guess. And, of course, the British Navy, to keep the Churchill in 1940, to keep the French Navy out of the under control of Adolf Hitler, who didn't really have that big a navy. They had a lot of submarines, or they had submarines, and they had lost the Bismarck in the battle, and some of their other ships. The Tirpitz got bottled up in Norway. So Churchill tried to persuade the French Navy, which had fled to North Africa, to join the British fleet to keep control of the Mediterranean and the Atlantic and the convoys, and they didn't. And so the British Navy went after the French Navy, and the French Navy was in its harbor at Dakar, and they sank and damaged several French ships, and killed a lot of French sailors, and a lot of bad feeling about that, but that's what Churchill decided, to keep part of the French fleet out of the control of Adolf Hitler. And Admiral Delon, who was the number two man in the Vichy government, but he wavered back and forth, he was later assassinated. Also, we had, people beginning to discover patriotism and what things mean, what America means to them. I think I'll play a great recording we have in our archives from Lawrence Melchior, who was an immigrant, legal immigrant from Denmark, probably the greatest Helden tenor of all time, and certainly modern history, because we don't have recordings of the time of Wagner back in the 18th century. He refused to sing at Bayreuth for Hitler. I came to the United States, and he was the great male star in the Wagner operas at the Metropolitan Opera. And he sang this song, What America Means to Me, and I think it's very important because we need to reinstill patriotism in our youth and educate people that America does mean something to people who come here and who want to come here but can't. And so this song should inspire them and inspire us to appreciate what we have, and that is still have a lot of freedom. That's an old recording from our archives, and now I think this is appropriate since people are feeling patriotic this week, or should be. And, of course, John Kennedy is credited with the phrase, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. But he isn't the original author. It's Warren Harding, and we're going to play a clip from Warren Harding, who also was accused of having, quote, at that time, they used the phrase Negro blood. And he responded, I can't help it if one of my ancestors jumped over the back fence. It was one of these myths about Obama, Mr. O, being the first African or Negro to occupy the White House long before Mr. O was even born. Warren Harding was around. He was also a senator and publisher of a newspaper in Ohio. So here's Warren Harding talking about what you can do for your country.
There grows on me the realization of the unusual character of this occasion. Our republic has been at war before. It has asked to recruit the supreme sacrifices of its sons and daughters, and faith in America has been justified. Letting sons and daughters make the sublime effort went the hallowed graves of the nation's defenders. But we never before sacramented the battle under the flag of our foreign land. Never before was there the impressive spectacle of thousands of dead returning to find eternal resting place in the beloved homeland. The incidences do not parallel in the history that I know. These dead know nothing of our ceremonies today. They sense nothing of the sentiment or the tenderness which brings their wasted bodies to the homeland for burial, close to kin and friends and cherished associations. These poor bodies are but the clay tenements once possessed of souls with flamed and patriotic devotion, lighted new hopes on the battlegrounds of civilization, and in their sacrifices fed on to accuse autocracy before the court of eternal justice. We are not met for them, though we love and honor and speak a grateful tribute. It would be futile to speak to those who do not hear, or to sorrow for those who cannot sense it, or to exalt those who cannot know. But we can speak for country, we can reach those who sorrowed and sacrificed through their service, who suffered through their glory, who glory with the Republic through their heroic achievement, who rejoice in the civilization their heroism preserves. Every funeral, every memorial, every tribute is for the living, an offering in compensation of sorrow. When the light of life goes out, there's a new radiance in eternity. Somehow the glow of it leaves the darkness which is left behind. Never a death, but somewhere a new life. Never a sacrifice, but somewhere an atonement. Never a service, but somewhere, somehow an achievement. These have served, which is the supreme inspiration in living. They have earned everlasting gratitude, which is the supreme solace in dying. No one may measure the vast and varied affections and sorrows centering on this priceless cargo of bodies, once living, fighting for and finally dying for the Republic. One's words fail, his understanding is halted, his emotions are stirred beyond control when contemplating these thousands of beloved dead. I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. There's ringing in my ears like an admonition eternal, an insistent call. It must not be again. It must not be again. God grant that it will not be. Let a practical people join in cooperation with God to the end that it shall not be. I would not wish a nation for which men are not willing to fight and if need be to die, but I do wish for a nation where it's not necessary to ask that sacrifice. I do not pretend that millennial days have come, but I can believe in the possibility of a nation being so righteous as never to make a war of conquest, and a nation so powerful in righteousness that none will dare invoke her wrath. I wish for us such an America. These heroes were sacrificed in the supreme conflict of all human history. They saw democracy challenged and defended it. They saw civilization threatened and rescued it. They saw America affronted and resented it. They saw our nation's rights imperiled, stamp those rights with a new sanctity and renewed security. We shall not forget, no matter whether they lie amid the sweetness and the bloom of the homeland, or sleep in the soil they crimson, our mindfulness, our gratitude, our reverence shall be in the preserved republic, the maintained liberty, and the supreme justice for which they died.
Harding also used the term homeland, so people thought when George Bush used it after 9/11, 2001, that it was the first time it was used and depicted up from European dictators. But you just heard in that speech that Harding used that term a couple of times, use that phrase, the homeland. So we're going to end with our usual politics and poker. We'll be back Monday, and next week we're hoping to have that interview with Patrick Butler on his book, his debut book, about a neighborhood in Chicago which has very significant because Chicago is thought of as a city of neighborhoods, and there's some interesting things that you won't find in places like San Francisco or Los Angeles, Seattle, even Hawaii, Honolulu. Some unique things about some of the cities and neighborhoods in the cities in the mainland here, as they say, when you're in Hawaii. So we'll end with our usual politics and poker, and we'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. Go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. Also, we will, since we had to use a new browser with some problems, AmicusVeritas.net, AmicusVeritas.net, or .inf. So we'll end with politics and poker, and of course, I understand with the 4th of July, Congress, congressional, our representatives are not in Washington, and some of them, they're all playing politics, but how many play poker?
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the plan?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, what to bet,
where to call up the...
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll fall.
I'll fold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Play for a pot! That's mediocre! Politics and poker! Rubbing neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because you and me, you can stack the deck!
You gotta have
back Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a safe weekend. No more firecrackers. We'll create our own fireworks next week. This is Peter Paul Brizola. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. Good night. Have a safe weekend.